My guest this evening is Ron Enyard, longtime jazz drummer here in Cincinnati. And, well, we're just going to talk about some stuff. Is that okay with you?
Stuff is said. That makes me think of the great violinist Stuff Smith.
Okay.
And they put out an album one time called The Real Stuff.
This is what I'm talking about here. Now, when I say longtime Cincinnati drummer, we actually have some newly released evidence of this status. It's the 1967 local gig, a date on the Cadence Jazz label. And I wanted to ask you about this because, I mean, there are people on here I don't know. It's recorded at a place that I don't know. And, I mean, I was born here in Cincinnati. So let's talk about this. 1967, it's credited to you and tenor sax player
Bobby Miller.
Bobby Miller.
Bobby Miller.
So who's Bobby Miller?
Well, Bobby Miller was kind of a legendary figure, died young, probably died 2 or 3 years after this was recorded. Can we say he lived the hard life and put it all on the line and didn't have any much of a future health-wise.
Okay.
So died young. He was around Chicago a lot. He used to hang with Gene Ammons and Sonny Stitt, two of the great heavy tenor players. Bobby was the real deal. He was far more than a local legend. Had things gone well for him, I think we'd have all known about Bobby Miller, but that's kind of the tragedy of the jazz life, that he wasn't well known. According to some people in the know, someone was just about to coming in from New York to record him, and maybe he would have had national and international fame, but that didn't happen. He passed away. So it's kind of one of those tragic, you know, Bix Beiderbecke stories, although Bix did record a lot. I shouldn't say Bix, but one of those tragic jazz lives, and we don't like to romanticize that, but we like to acknowledge his music, and that was the idea of getting this out so people with jazz ears could recognize his genius. I've sent this up to people in New York, some people playing the Village Vanguard Orchestra. This was before it was issued, and they said, "My God, who is Bobby Miller? Is it all right if I pass this around?" And I said, "Please do." And later, we of course put it on a disc on Cadence label, which I've been working with for several years.
So. Okay. Well, let me ask this then: Bobby Miller, pretty hard player on this one.
Very. The first track. What is it?
First one is "Get Happy." Yeah.
Get Happy. And how long is that?
25 and a half minutes.
25 and a half minutes. And somebody will say, "Good, enough already." But that's not the case. He just keeps building and building without. You know, there's people that, especially nowadays with jazz education, there's a lot of technical facility, and I think Bobby probably didn't even graduate from high school. He learned his ability to play on the streets, which is the way it used to be. When this was recorded, they weren't even teaching jazz in schools, and I've mentioned this many times. People say, "Are you kidding?" But we used to be thrown out of practice rooms at the conservatory for playing jazz. The campus police would come in and say, "You can get out of here, you guys." And in an odd sort of way, not putting the scene down today, because it's a totally different scene. You can't compare them. But life was musically for jazz musicians was a lot better then, gig-wise, than it is now, by far. Of course, a lot of other factors into that.
Well, listen, let me ask you about the recording location. It's at a club called Herbie's here in Cincinnati, which I never heard of. Can you tell us where it used to be?
Well, the building's still there. It was at Taft and Hackberry, right on the corner, small little club. There was times it didn't do a lot of business. Herbie wanted a six-night-a-week jazz club. And he had his jukebox there, and he liked to play his Frank Sinatra records. And it was kind of his world and in turn, our world. I played there for 9 months straight. So this is 6 nights a week. And then left for a while. I did other things and came back, did 5 months. Yeah, it was a great opportunity. Didn't pay real well, but that wasn't the idea. And the truth, he didn't make that much money off of it. So you can't say, if he was making a lot of money, I would have wanted more. But there were nights it was very slow. But we played and played and had various guests. Gordon Brisker was a guest with us. Some friends of mine from Indiana playing with us. Trotty Heck played some piano there. Scott McKeon, our old trio, old friends, got together. So, yeah, it was quite a scene. Six nights a week, Taft and Hackberry, Herbie's Neoteric Lounge, he called it.
Oh, my goodness.
And he advertised a lot on NOP radio, and we get a lot of the people from NOP in as customers. And, yeah, it was just a unique little place.
Now, how did the recording take place? I mean, did someone just come in with a tape set up? And
Bobby was our guest not long, maybe a couple weekends. I brought a tape machine in myself. I recorded. I had someone running the machine. I'm not sure who was running the machine. Maybe Dave Henshaw or maybe Judy Billings. I don't like to record when I'm playing because it's really distracting, wondering if you release the pause button, is the record light on? But anyway, I put them in charge of it. We had a couple decent microphones and a home Sony. It wasn't professional equipment or engineers, but we turned the machine on one night, and I really regret not recording more nights. I don't know what I was thinking, but probably what I was thinking is I don't want to fool with this because I'm here to play, not to record and play.
So. Now, you're probably sitting there, you're drumming away, you've got a tape going, and you notice that this guy is playing a 25-minute piece, and you're wondering, surely in the back of your head, do I have enough tape?
Isn't that the thought? I probably was thinking that, although hopefully I had a fresh, high-quality, you know, 7-inch reel that had some time. But, yeah, this guy could play out a tape. But Bobby, again, he, on that first track, without intending it to be that way, it's almost like the history of the tenor saxophone, or not the from the earliest days, but maybe from the bebop era. He starts kind of conventional, kind of Hank Mobley, just good solid tenor, and little by little he builds and builds. Without it being planned that way, he builds and goes into other concepts, and then he ends up in the Coltrane. But I think it's a good listening because some people think, well, Coltrane is way out. I can't get with that. But if you start with early Coltrane and move step by step, then you say, aha, of course you can't, like, start at the end of his career, start at the beginning. But Bobby kind of builds that way, and in some ways it's very educational without it intending to be because Bobby wasn't thinking in those terms. Now, I think he was thinking in terms of respect for all great tenor saxophone players.
And we're talking Bobby Middleware. How about the other players, too? You had Sam Jackson.
Yes. I talked to Sam a while back on the phone, and we were real happy to get this out. And Sam, I think he's playing some at home. He was working a lot in the in Indiana at the casinos, playing solo piano, and I believe he had a mild stroke kind of cut into his performance, although he says he's still playing at home. But Sam was such a wonderful player, and as you can hear on this tape, unfortunately, is a little under-recorded. Like I say, this is kind of a home recording, but you hear his solos. A lot of piano players say, oh, I've got to match Bobby Miller and play a lot of real far out and carry on. Sam is just keeps his cool, plays his kind of tasty Tommy Flanagan-type playing, and that was his best. So it was a very mature approach on Sam's part. I told him that after it came out. I said, man, it was just great because, again, most people would either try to match Bobby or be tremendously inhibited by what he was putting down. But Sam just kept his cool, played his very hip, tasty piano with a nice touch, and that's a great sign of maturity.
And the bass player's name, I get the name.
Burgoyne Denny.
Mm-hmm.
Burgoyne was a major figure around town at that period, good solid player, not a virtuoso type that a lot of people were trying to get into at that time. He was more foundation-type player. Beautiful human being, and he died too early as well, shortly, maybe around the time Bobby passed away.
Now, the three of you, were you together as a regular set?
We were the regular trio there, and then we would have guests from time to time. But, yeah, the rhythm section was the house trio, I guess it was called at that time.
Now, the three of you, you played together a lot. How would it set up when a guest would come in? Did he come in with a playlist? Did you guys have to rehearse for a long time to get to know each other and then play the evening set?
Oh, yes, we rehearsed and we rehearsed and taped and listened and then decided, let's not do that. No, of course, I'm kidding. We had no rehearsals, no song list. Bobby comes in, calls some tunes and maybe standard. But that's the great thing about jazz musicians. They know standards and play them in various keys. I think we could have someone from China and someone from Spain and someone from Harlem and someone from Chicago and come in and not even speak. You don't even have to. You just call a tune and play it. And I wish the public could pick up on that, that we don't have to rehearse and go in the studio. The pop bands go in the studio for hours and hours and hours and piece things together. No, this is totally spontaneous music, playing off the form of the piece. People think, oh, improv and spontaneity, you can just do anything you want. Well, you can do anything you want as long as it fits the chord structure and the harmonic structure and of the song. We're improvising on that.
And so it's a basic, you know, that wealth of tunes you're talking about that jazz musicians know.
Mm-hmm.
And then you get together the individual players, you get together at that moment, and that's what makes the performance.
Right. Last time I was here, I was comparing it to sports, like, oh, everyone is so into sports and what's going to happen the next moment. This is the same thing, but not in a physical, athletic sense, but in an artistic sense, from moment to moment. I think we're one of the few that's doing this type of thing. East Indian music, they improvise, but that's a whole different system. But we do have that in common. But no rehearsal. No, nothing. You know, you look at your watch and say, is Bobby going to be here? It's 2 minutes till hit time. And 1 minute before, he arrives. And Sam used to do that every night. He'd come in 1 minute before. He'd always make it, but he'd come in 1 minute before starting time. But no, it's kind of hard to imagine that it could be so loose and yet so together. But that's the nature. And as an individual's, we like to think that way. I'm a spontaneous player. We all have our what we call licks to fall back on, but I go from moment to moment. If I put something down, and it's like conversation, like we're having. We haven't planned this ahead so much as we have a general theme, but we give and take. Oh, all of a sudden something will pop into our head. Oh, I forgot about that. We'll put that in. So it's very much like a verbal communication.
Well, thanks a lot for talking with us, and good luck, continued good luck to you.
Can I mention another performance?
Please do.
We're starting at Ohm Cafe on Ludlow, across from the Esquire Theater. Be there every Monday. And it's the same band, David Tarbell singing with us, and the Bradley Vines, and Josh Jessen, and myself. That's a 6 o'clock hit, and then the Japs is a 8 o'clock hit. The Japs on Wednesday, Ohm on Monday.
Ron Enyart, thanks very much for being here with us.
Thank you.
And for Around Cincinnati, I'm Frank Johnson.